and quick to discern the thoughts and intents of the heart. His Word, it is able to cut deep and to reveal that which we may think is hidden. God knows what's in our heart. And therefore, God knows what's there. He knows how we think about Him. You know, we were talking in the last hour about worship, about what is true worship, as we saw from Psalms 100. And the kind of worship that we are to be offering unto the Lord. Well, the Lord knows what's in our heart. The Lord knows right now if we are engaged, honestly engaged in worship. He knows if we came here this morning with a heart full of joy and praise and adoration to be offered unto Him. Or whether we came, as some do, with the attitude of, what is it that the preacher can give me today? What can I get out of it? Have we come wanting to put something into our worship, into the praise of God, or have we come with our thoughts focused on ourselves? The Lord knows what's in our minds. He knows how we think about Him. He knows about how we think about ourselves. He knows whether we think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, Romans chapter 12 and verse 3. He knows how we think about others. Are we prejudiced? He knows if we're prejudiced. He knows what's in our heart. He knows if we make a judgment against another just simply because of the color of the skin that they happen to be born with. He knows if we make a judgment about others because of the way that they look, because of the clothing that they wear, about whether they're able to wear as nice a jewelry as what we are. You know, James talked about that over in James chapter 2 in the first four verses. He talked about prejudice and condemned it as wrong. Well, the Lord knows what's in our heart. And He knows if we judge others superficially like that. He knows what's in our minds and in our hearts with regards to our families. Whether we are thinking as we ought to toward our mate. Whether we're thinking as we should toward our children, towards our parents, towards our own family. Whether we have our minds thinking straight there. He knows our thought about the work of the church. He knows our thought about His Word. He knows our thoughts about everything. And that ought to be a scary thing for us to contemplate, that there's not a thing that goes through our mind that He doesn't know. It ought to scare some people to death and cause them to wake up and change their ways. But sadly, in many cases, it doesn't. But if He knows our thoughts, then surely we should understand that He's well aware of our words. He knows everything that comes forth from our mouth. Over in Matthew chapter 12, and in verses 36 and 37... Matthew 12 and verses 36 and 37. And I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. We're going to have to give an account of the words that we speak. And so we should be careful about every word that comes out of our mouth. We should stop and think very carefully about what we are about to say, what is about to come out. Remember, it's a reflection of what's in our heart. And He knows what's in our heart. So whether we say the words or not, He already knows the motives behind them. But we need to be careful about the words that we allow to come out of our heart. He knows if our words are words of encouragement. Over in Isaiah 50 and verse 4, I like this verse. Isaiah 50 and verse 4. Because He talks about our words. And notice what He says. Isaiah 50 and verse 4 says, "The Lord Jehovah hath given me the tongue of them that are taught, that I may know how to sustain with words him that is weary." The words that we use are supposed to be the kind of things that will sustain those that are weary, that will build them up, that will give them hope, that will give them the help that they need to deal with the problems of the day. Is that the kind of words that the Lord will see us using? The kind of words that will sustain those that are weary? Does He see us speaking those kind of words that are really a blessing for others? In Romans 12 and verse 14, "Bless them that persecute you. Bless and curse not." Are we a blessing to others just by our words? There's some people I can't wait to be around just because our conversation is always such that it builds me up. Is that the kind of words that you use? Do you build up or do you tear down? And a lot of people that tear down don't even realize that they do it. They seem oblivious to the way in which they talk. And it is abrasive and it is offensive in many cases and it turns people off. But our words are to be such that will sustain and be a blessing to others. And of course, our words should always be truthful. Ephesians 4, verse 25. Putting away falsehood, speak ye truth, each one with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. We're to always speak words of truth. Well, the Lord knows. What does He see in our house? What is He seeing? Is He seeing us use our language, use our words in improper ways? Does He see us engaging in gossip, talking about other people behind their backs and causing harm as we ruin their reputation behind their backs? Does He see that going on? Does He see us as brethren backbiting, as we might say, speaking against a brother behind their back? Does He see us lying, as we alluded to a minute ago, teaching that which is not true? What does He see with the kind of words that we use? You know, it may not even be something that is wrong in and of itself. We may be talking about things that are good and right in every which way. Maybe the thing that the Lord sees with our tongue is that we have everything in the world to talk about but Him. And that too is wrong. The Lord is aware of everything that comes from our mouth. He knows, He sees, and He's going to judge our actions. Jesus said, "Why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" We're to do the things that He's commanded that we do. And He knows whether we do or not. He knows whether we're faithfully executing His will or seeking to follow our own. Ask yourself these questions. You know, has God seen by your actions that you are a lover of pleasure rather than being a lover of self? That you are a lover of pleasure rather than being a lover of God, rather? That was over in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 4. Does He see that you are a lover of self rather than a lover of God? Or does He see that you have set your mind on the things that are above rather than on the things that are upon the earth? What does He see in your mind? Has He seen us forsaking our own assembling together as the custom of some is? Hebrews 10 verse 25. Does He see evidence that we're striving to fulfill the Great Commission by sharing the story of His love, the story of Jesus, with those that we come in contact with day to day? Does He see us striving to overcome evil with good? Romans 12 and verse 21. Does He see in us a strong conviction of faith that is willing to stand up for Him? Or does He see us weak in faith and easily tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine? Ephesians 4 and verse 14. Does God see Jesus living in us? Galatians 2 and verse 20. What does God see? What does God see in your house, in your physical house, and what does He see in that house which is your heart? God knows it all, and He sees it all. We need to think about what it is that God is saying. But I want to turn our attention to something else. We need to consider what our children see in our house. What our children see. As Christians, our goal is to live our life on this earth in such a way that when this life is over, we can go to heaven. That we can have that eternal home with the Father and to take as many others with us as we can. And that begins at home. That begins with our own children. Raising them in such a way that they will make the choice to become a child of God and live their life in service to the Lord and have that same eternal hope that you and I have. But sometimes our kids are lost because of things that they saw in our house. And we need to stop and contemplate that. We need to recognize that children are very quick to pick up on hypocrisy. You see, we may say that the Lord is important to us. We may say that we are committed to the cause of Christ, to His work. We can say that we are a faithful Christian, but what do we show our children? By the things that they see us saying and doing, do they see that profession being confirmed? Or do they see by the fact that we never study our Bible at home, we never engage in prayer, we never talk about spiritual things, we never talk about that friend or that neighbor who is lost and we're trying to reach them for Jesus? They never see us in any of those kind of scenarios. And are we not in reality telling them that something other than the Lord is really most important to us? Aren't we really denying the thing that we are affirming verbally to them, that the Lord is the most important thing to us, when we act in a totally different way? We've got to recognize our place as parents to raise our children properly. At a very early age, they will pick up what our real priorities are. And so we've got to make sure that we put the Lord first in our life. If the Lord isn't first in your life, then He's not in your life. We've got to have Him first in our life in every way. And we've got to have Him as the top priority in our life. And we've got to instill that type of commitment in our children as well. But for that to happen, we've got to listen to Jesus. Jesus said in Matthew 22 and verse 37, He said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind." With everything about us, we're to love the Lord our God. And that's not just in word, but that's also in deed. We've got to show that that's the case. Matthew 6 and verse 33, Jesus said, "But seek ye first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." We're to put first, top priority, the Lord and His kingdom. Our children must not only hear us say that that's the case, but they must also see that that is the case by the things that they see us doing, the things they hear us saying day to day. What do your children see in your house? What do your children, what are they to think when they see that at home, you know, they're never permitted to miss school, but they are permitted to miss the Bible classes that the local church may have organized for them to take advantage of? What are they to think when we insist that they get their homework for school? And I'm not sure if the schools even have homework anymore. They ought to if they don't. But if they do, we make sure they get it, don't we? But we don't necessarily make sure that they prepare for the Bible classes that are conducted by the brethren. I remember growing up, we always had to get our Bible lesson first. You know, that was back in the day of Saturday morning cartoons. You didn't have a cartoon network. You had Saturday morning for 3 or 4 hours, and that was the cartoons for the week. We weren't allowed to watch unless we had first done our Bible lessons for Sunday morning. But we don't seem to we don't see that a lot anymore. We don't see the emphasis on that like we ought to. And I suggest that sends the wrong message to our children, that it sends the message that other things are more important than the Lord and the pursuit of things of that nature. When they see us, observe us at home, do they see us studying our Bibles? Do they see us doing all that we can to be active participants in the local church work? As we go home from church, do they hear us complaining of what brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so said or did? Or do they hear us speaking in private in words of commendation for our brethren, for what they've done and the good example they are for us? Now, what is it that our children are seeing? Is it the kind of thing that is going to lead them to the Lord or drive them away? Are they going to see that our mind is focused on the things of the Lord or focused on the pleasures of this life? So many parents, I think, have wasted their years, the most important years of their children's lives. I don't know how many times over the years we have worked with brethren whose children grew up and left the Lord and were gone. And it just broke their heart that their kids were lost. And in many of those cases, it was because during those most influential years for their children, mom and dad were not faithful. Those were the years that they chose to take off, so to speak, and not serve the Lord faithfully. And as a result, their kids were influenced by that lack of service and faithfulness to the Lord. And they grew up without that, and thus they went their own way, and now it's too late. And they're lost. We've got to be careful, parents, that those most important years are not wasted, because we can't put it all back together later. There's a poem that I want to read. It's called The Sculptor, and it goes like this. "I took a piece of plastic clay and idly fashioned it one day, and as my fingers pressed it, still it bent and yielded to my will. I came again when days were past. The bit of clay was hard at last. The form I gave it, still it bore, but I could change that form no more. Then I took a piece of living clay and gently formed it day by day, and molded with my power and art a young child's soft and yielding heart. I came again when years were gone. It was a man I looked upon. He still that early impress bore, and I could change it nevermore. They're like clay in your hands when they're young, but they're going to harden over time. And so don't waste those most important years. We have parents here this morning with young kids. I have this question for you. Will your children go to heaven? Think about that. That is a sobering question. And I don't think that there's a parent alive in the family of God that would quickly see and understand that maybe their child could be among them. There's a good possibility that they will. Maybe half, or I don't even know what the exact percentages would be, but there's a pretty high percentage of children of Christians that are lost to the world when they leave home. Some years ago in Dyersburg, we moved to Dyersburg and were working for 8 years with the Lake Road congregation, and then at that point we merged with the Central congregation. And they are now known as the Parr Avenue Congregation. They sold both buildings and built a new one. But when we merged, Pat had been working at Lake Road with the class material there and this material called Our Spiritual Heritage. I don't know if you've even heard of it here. And it was really good material. And she used it there heavily for years at Lake Road. And when we merged, the elders had her to present that information to the ladies of the congregation there. And what Pat did, she put together a PowerPoint. And on the screen was every name of every child in the congregation. So you could be sitting there as one of those mothers and be able to look up and see your child's name up there. And then she said, you know, it reminded them that 50, 60, 70, whatever the percentage is, are going to be lost to the world. So whose names do we want to take off? As a mother, would you want your name to be taken off that list? Would you want your name, the names of your children to be among those that are lost? She was just trying to motivate them, trying to get them to see and to recognize the importance of that work of teaching in those Bible classes. But of course, that's secondary to the responsibilities that you as a mother or father have in your home. Will your children go to heaven? Think about that through the day today. Think about that as you go to bed tonight, about the job you're doing as a parent and whether or not you're raising them in a way that will cause them to want to be children of God. The answer to that question may well depend on what they see in your house. But I want to turn our attention to what others have seen in our house. And it's not working. So they will have to fix that. What are others seeing in our house? What do your friends and neighbors see in your house? Do they see any difference in their house and your house? Is there anything different there at all? I think that it's a real problem that in a lot of cases, nothing different is seen. That what is perceived in the houses of Christians is nothing different than what is perceived in the houses of unbelievers. That it's all the same thing. There ought to be a difference. And we're called upon for there to be a difference. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, and in verses 14 through 18, Paul shows us that we're to be different. We're to be different from those in the world. 2 Corinthians 6, and beginning of verse 14, says, "Be not unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what fellowship have righteousness and iniquity? Or what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what portion hath a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For we are a temple of the living God, even as God said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore come ye out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be to you a father, and ye shall be to me sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." And so there's to be a difference seen. There's to be a difference in godly parents and worldly parents. There's to be a difference because we've come out of the world and we're separate from it. And that separateness should be obvious to those who look at us for any any length of time. Our lives are an open book. Over in 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 2, Paul said that they were an open book, that people could read them and know and read them. And you know, we are open books. People can see what we do, and they can reach some conclusions about us. Remember early on in our marriage, we were living in Rockwood, Tennessee, and right next door, couldn't begin to tell you their name, but a nice young couple with children, lived in a trailer, and they were constantly coming and going, dressed up, and they were going to church. They weren't Christians. They were denominationalists of some sort, but they were constantly coming and going, obviously engaged in those kind of activities that they that a fervent believer in whatever it is they believe would be doing. They didn't have to tell me that they were churchgoers. We could see it by what they were doing. Their life was an open book in that way. Our life is an open book to others, to those that we live near. They can see and know what's going on in our life by what they observe. What has the world seen in your house? What has the world seen in your physical house? Sure. But what's the world see in your life? Do they see in your life that, the gospel of Christ at work? Are they being touched by the gospel by simply seeing you live the gospel? Or are they, as a result of your life, being driven even further away from the Lord because of the ungodliness that they see you engaging in? What is it that the world has seen? I want to end with this question. What should... My whole show is not there. The part of it got cut off. But what has the world... should be seen in our house? What should be seen? Well, I want to suggest that what ought to be seen in our houses are husbands who love their wives, who love them as their own bodies. Ephesians chapter 5, 23, 25 talk about. What should be seen in our houses are wives who love their husbands, who submit willfully to them, who respect them. Again, Ephesians 5, verse 24, verse 33. There ought to be seen their children who are obedient to their parents, who are being trained in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, being disciplined as needed, corrective discipline as needed. There ought to be seen in our houses prayers being uttered to God, prayers of thanksgiving, prayers as we plead to Him for help in whatever the need of the day might be. There should be seen there the study of the Bible, the faithful execution of all those things that God would have us as His children to be doing. Is there seen there a spirit of love and kindness and cooperation and unity and peace, joy and happiness? What is seen in your house? What has God seen? What have your children seen? What have your neighbor and the world, what have they seen? If there's anything seen there that is not like it ought to be, if it's the kind of thing that shows you're not like you need to be in the sight of God, if it shows those things that will lead others away from the Lord rather than toward Him, you have some things you need to fix. As a child of God, we've called upon you this morning to make whatever changes need to be made in your life to get things right. You've sinned in a public way and you need the prayers of the brethren here, we'd be happy to pray for you. I don't know many of you here this morning, but I'd be honored to pray on your behalf to the God of heaven that the sins of your life that you're repenting of be forgiven. If you'd like for us to do that, we'd be happy to. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, there is no better time than now. Begin serving Him even today. We would ask that you let your wishes be known while together we're standing and while we're singing.